Welcome to part two of our interview with Lance Anderson, author of the book Life in the Morgue. So you're walking in to these highly charged situations, obviously. The investigators have done their part. Now it's your turn to get the body out of there. And we talked then about the mental toll that it would take on an individual without anything paranormal happening. But in this job, what happened there? Was there anything that began to occur that made you go, I think there's something else going on here other than just I'm in a very highly emotionally charged situation with a body? Anything supernatural or paranormal?
I don't know. Some people say because of all the ghost hunting that I kind of have my own little sixth sense. Mm-hmm. I call it my spidey senses, and I can't really tell you what's happening or what's going on, but I get all tingly about that. Something's not right with this place.
Yeah.
And we had one particular scene. I don't remember if he was an overdose intentionally. He was a suicide, but I'm pretty sure it was an overdose. And we went to go pick him up. And I remember I was with this other guy named John, and I stopped at the doorway, and he's like, "What's the matter?" And I'm like, "There's something not quite right with this, not quite right with this place." And he's like, "Well, you know, obviously we have to go get our body." And you know, the detectives were inside; they were all done with what they were doing. So we go inside the building. I mean, inside the apartment, and it was just he was a white supremacist, mm-hmm. and there was all kinds of Nazi paraphernalia around and a big swastika flag over his fireplace, and there was all kinds of occult and black magic books and magazines around the apartment. And it was just it's just kind of weird, because I just knew before we even got in there there was something not quite right with that place.
Yeah, the energy in the building being off because of everything, his deplorable belief systems, and then what he was trying to intermingle into that with the occult.
It was just bad energy. That's I guess the best way to put it. Just a bad energy, and I knew it before I even got in.
Yeah. Many people, I'm sure, wonder, and you can give us a firsthand account into this, is a morgue. It's a room filled with bodies that are essentially there waiting their next destination, whether it be cremation, whether it be burial at the funeral home. In that setting, that has to be somewhat, you know, unsettling, at least at first. Is there anything that went on at the morgue or anything of that nature that you look back upon and go, that was odd, that was off, or that one that came in, there was something going on there? Do you have any experiences there?
Do you mean paranormal experiences, yeah, or just a body that came in that wasn't quite right?
Well, I guess touch on both.
I had one case come in. We actually had a livery service bring the body in because we didn't have a truck available, and I was processing him in. And part of the processing is, you know, the body has to get undressed, and you log all the clothing and stuff and bag it. And as I was taking his shirt off, I noticed he had a skull fracture. I could feel it with my hand. He had a skull fracture on the back of his head. So, you know, a homicide, immediately there's trauma to the body that's not supposed to be trauma. So it immediately gets labeled suspicious, if not a homicide. So you stop the processing and had to start had the state police come down, and they took photos and started this whole investigation. And as it turns out, the man died of cardiac issues is what showed in the autopsy. But they had this whole investigation going on for about a week and a half, 2 weeks on just how he got this skull fracture, mm-hmm. because that's obviously very suspicious.
Sure.
And as it turned out, the delivery service dropped the body when they were transporting it. And that was the end result of the investigation. But, you know, just little old me, ironworker guy, started this big homicide investigation because the body wasn't quite right.
Sure. Well, it makes you wonder sometimes, too, if and this would be a good question for someone who is, you know, be considered empathic or very sensitive to be in that job, if they could handle being in that job, that might be a little too overwhelming. You know, if you do die from a cause other than what they're listing it as, you know, that would be the last place really to get the word out to somebody that could pay attention and do some investigating of, you know, what actually did happen to you. Did you ever feel the presence of anybody in the building with those bodies? Like maybe that person that was still accompanying their own body into the morgue?
I don't know if it was somebody accompanying their own body into the morgue, but the morgue itself had its own happenings going on.
Okay.
we had what was named the deco room doctor, and by deco it's the decomposition room. They had a separate autopsy room for decomposed bodies, and they had their own cooler, and there was an entity there known as the deco room doctor, and several people had seen him.
Tell me about the deco room doctor. Tell me a specific story that stands out to you about him making his presence known.
Well, as you can imagine, the doctors, I mean, there are several doctors there. There was, and as well as a few part-time ones. And we had a part-time medical examiner, woman doctor, and she was never happy to be assigned a decomposed body. But she was assigned a decomposed body one morning, and she had called down to the tech station and said she'd be down in about 10, 15 minutes and wanted me to get him all set up for her. So I went to the deco room and pulled the body out, got him all hooked up on the autopsy table, and I got her all her equipment laid out and stuff, and went back to the tech station. She finally come down and asked if her body was set up, and I said, yep. And she walked over to the door, and she just kind of stopped and put her hands on her hips, and she was looking through the little rectangular window on the door. And then she come back with like a lot of attitude, and she's like, I thought I was in the deco room today. And I'm like, well, you are. And she says, well, there's someone in there right now going over my body with a clipboard, or going over a body with a clipboard. And I was like, no, doctor, it's, you know, I just got your guy set up. I left that room 5 minutes ago. No one else has come down. Mm-hmm. So we went over to the room and went in there, and obviously no one's in there.
Yeah.
So that's the deco room. Now we don't know who he'd be, because there's no doctors that, you know, passed away in the building. I mean, I'm sure people that have worked there have passed away, but no one recent, that's for sure. So he's been in there.
But no one's able to identify who this doctor may be that has returned.
Nobody can put an ID on him, no. Like I said, there's an incredible turnover rate as far as employees, and that goes for technicians and medical examiners in that place.
Why do you think that is? I mean, obviously, it's not exactly, you know, probably listed ever as one of the most desirable jobs in the world, but is that more so due to just what the job is and the stresses of it, or is it... does it have anything to do with people discovering that when they're that close to bodies and individuals who have passed on to death, that it also puts them that much closer as well to the spirits that may be attached with those bodies?
It may have something to do with spirit attachment, but I think my personal opinion is I think TV shows have really kind of glamorized what a medical examiner's office is.
Okay.
You know, as like we were previously discussing, if you're not prepared to see some of this stuff, it can be pretty traumatic.
Sure.
I mean, there like I said, there's, you know, images in my head that I will never shake. So it kind of takes a special person, I guess, to be able to work in there. And, you know, that's doctors included. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone comes in and thinks it's a big fancy, you know, TV style type job, and it's really not.
Sure. Were there any other areas of the morgue that had their own activity going on in it, other than the decomposing room?
Yeah, I have an entire chapter in my book based on the paranormal experiences I had in there. And I was just told the other night, someone, a former coworker, read it, and he was like, "Was that stuff true?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Man, that gave me goosebumps." And I'm like, "Yeah."
Tell us about that. Tell us about that other area.
Okay, I'll give you one of the book stories.
Yeah.
So there was a night I was working at an overnight shift with two other technicians, and I was the supervisor. I had sent them out on the road. They were going to a couple of hospitals to pick up some cases. So I was alone in the building. It's like 2:30 in the morning. And I'm sitting at the tech station, minding my own business. And the phone rings, but it rang with an internal line tone. You know, you have an internal line, it's got like a one solid tone, and an outside line will have two rings.
Sure.
So the internal line tone rings, and I look at the caller ID. It was extension 106, which is what's called the ante room. And that's where you get suited up for the autopsies and stuff. It's a small room right off of the autopsy room. And I'm like, that's weird, because that's like 50 feet away tops from where I'm sitting. So I answered the phone, and it's like tech station, like confused. And I just got static. It went and hung up. And I'm like, huh, that's creepy.
Yeah.
So I walked down to the ante room down the hallway and, you know, opened the door. All the lights are off. Nothing's disturbed. There's two desks in there. The chairs are pushed in. Phones are sitting right where they're supposed to be. And I'm like, wow, that's really weird. Kind of creeped me out. I go back to the tech station, and I'm sitting there. Now I'm trying to think of what could possibly cause an inside line to ring. And all I could think of was, we had this kid. He was young, real early 20s, like 22 years old. He was still in college. And I used to kind of play practical jokes on him all the time inside the morgue, because he wasn't very well acclimated to dealing with dead bodies. Mm-hmm. So I used to play jokes on him, and I'm thinking, oh, maybe he's getting back at me. So I picked up and I overhead paged the entire building, because it's obviously empty. And I was like, ha, Justin, you got me. And he says, come on down. And then there was nothing. 20 minutes or so later, inside line rings again. And I looked at the caller ID, and it was like 107. Mm-hmm. Which is the other phone in the autopsy room. I mean, the ante room. So I picked it up, and I'm like, all right, Justin, you got me. And I got nothing. I got that same short burst of static, and it hung up. So now I go running down to the room. Nothing, once again, nothing's disturbed. I go through that room into the autopsy room. All the lights are out. Nothing's disturbed in there. And I'm thinking, there's no way, if he called me from that extension, that he could have gotten out of that room before I saw him.
Sure.
But he wasn't there. went back to my tech station again. On the way back to the tech station, I stopped. I took one of the big gurneys. They're 110-pound stainless steel tables on wheels. I took one of them and put it in front of the cooler door and locked the wheels on the outside. So if anything opened the door, I'd hear it. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of went back to my tech station and sat there waiting for someone to come out and say they got me, but no one ever came out. I called in the morning when day shift people started coming in. I was waiting for him to come in to try and figure out how did you get an inside line to ring?
Sure.
At, you know, 2:30 in the morning. And I waited and I waited and I waited till 7:30. Day shift started at 7. I waited till 7:30. And I said to the day shift supervisor, I says, where's Justin? And he's like, Justin, he's on vacation. He's in Florida. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. So, yeah.
So, I mean, it's interesting. Do you feel that the haunting activity stems from the living that had, like, the employees and people who had been there? Or do you think it stems from the bodies who move in and out of that building?
I don't know. I've been asked that before. And a bigger part of me really wants to say, I don't think, I mean, I suppose it's possible that a spirit would follow its body. Mm-hmm. I personally don't think it's very likely. I think the spirit is going to stay where it's comfortable.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Sure. Sure.
So I don't know. I don't know if the spirits are going to follow their bodies, you know, to all the way to the morgue.
Yeah, it's one of those places where, like funeral homes, like cemeteries, things of that nature, not common places that the living tend to be at while they're alive. So it's interesting as to why would they be there when they're dead to haunt those locations. But an area, though, that I'm sure still, you know, highly charged with energy more than anything else, just with the not necessarily the acts that happened with these individuals passing, but just the living that are left to deal with the aftermath, like yourself when you were there to get those bodies into that building to assist with essentially the restoration or cleanup, probably not the correct terminology, but that sort of care that's involved, you know, emotionally charged work, to say the least.
Definitely emotionally charged.
Yeah,
you really have to learn to compartmentalize things and separate yourself from exactly what's going on.
That wraps up part two of our interview with Lance Anderson about life in the morgue. Thank you for supporting our program and keeping us on the air. Until next time for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. Thank you.